Over it yesterday on two occasions, and there wasn't any sheen noted, but that's our best assessment as to whether how a sheen could occur and what we have been able to see in the past. But we're confident that there isn't any oil leaking from the vessel.
Fate said that the boom was hanging up on the bow of the Exxon Valdez due to winds or other conditions. You didn't notice that?
Yes, sometimes the wind will bring the boom up close on the bow, and there was one occasion when it did hang up, and what we end up doing is having that tended so that the boom is laying properly.
The bow of a tanker tends to go underwater and then stick out like a nose, and it is a real tendency for it to run up on there. You have to tend the booms with a boat to keep it in shape. Okay. Did our bird lady arrive? All right. Thank you very much.
Don Cornett, the operations manager for Alaska for Exxon, concluding this press conference. We heard from a variety of Exxon personnel, and some we met for the first time. John Tompkins is with Exxon Shipping Company and is involved in the salvage efforts. And we also heard from Don Marsden, who's the Exxon claims manager on the scene here in Valdez. Monty Taylor also spoke briefly. Monty Taylor, a familiar face to Junoites over the years, worked for Exxon, was Don Cornett's predecessor. The statements we heard today, status report from Exxon, about 15,000 to 17,000 barrels of oil still on board the ship. Most of that oil either in safe compartments that were not holed during the grounding. There is, however, a sheen of oil or a layer of oil on top of water in the damaged compartments. They're working on skimming that off now before the vessel is completely repaired. We heard that there was some controversy among press members, but that about 2,300 barrels, 2,300 barrels a day is the goal for the skimmers. Some 18,000 barrels of oil have been recovered. Some 39 skimmers are at work. There are 200,000 feet of boom. Communications has been raised as an ongoing problem for the workers out in the field in Prince William Sound. There's a joint communications center being established, pooling resources from the state, Coast Guard, and Exxon. That should be in place probably by early next week. Elements are being worked on now. Salvage inspection is continuing. They mentioned that an additional 500 Alaskan hires are expected in the next 7 days. There are about 1,000 contract workers now, including both worker crews and crews on board boats. One note by Don Cornett of Exxon is that all the manpower that can be used currently is mobilized and is in hand. They've received about 400 claims requests so far. We also heard from, again, Don Marsden, the claims manager, regarding some of the questions about claims, clarifying what waivers and such people have to sign, and the fact that Exxon individually works out claims with each claimant. There was some controversy by press members about conflicting figures from Coast Guard and DEC briefings. One question regarded the effect of weather on the skimmers. There are 39 skimmers out, according to Exxon operations. The weather in the Gulf of Alaska is picking up, wind blowing at about 35 knots. However, in Prince William Sound, the conditions are not that dramatic. And so far as Exxon knows or says, the skimmers are in operation. There was evidently a report at an earlier DEC meeting this morning that said some of the skimmers may be coming in. Again, about 2,300 barrels a day is the estimate for oil recovery. About 40% of the 240,000 barrels originally spilled is estimated to have evaporated or dispersed to this point. 18,000 barrels have been recovered. That's still less than 1% of the oil. And a small amount has been burned or otherwise collected, which leaves about 60% of the original spill still at large, and that's divided equally or evenly between the shoreline, Prince William Sound, and the Gulf of Alaska, the North Gulf Coast. At this point, there are no other press conferences scheduled for today. We will be trying to get a briefing by DEC tomorrow, if one is scheduled, and also any further Exxon briefings, any briefings by DEC, the Coast Guard, the NTSB, or other organizations. We will be advising stations down the line. One other note was that the Exxon Valdez is undergoing the salvage repair work. Surveys have been completed. They're in the middle of analyzing the actual effects and impacts, and expect to begin the repair work and may have the vessel moving in a matter of weeks rather than months. I want to thank KCHU and Talkeetna, our community radio volunteer, Tricia King, for her assistance in this broadcast. Engineering back at the KCHU studios is James Winchester. Also, I'd like to acknowledge that continuing coverage of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and cleanup has been made possible in part by an emergency grant from the City of Valdez and listener contributions. We'll be back from the Valdez Civic Center or the Valdez City Council Chambers or wherever the next press conference is scheduled. I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom. We're standing by for the start of a National Wildlife Federation press conference. We'll be broadcasting this conference in Valdez and Cordova via KCHU Radio. Cameras are here, and they've been testing their white balance and getting ready to start, and now the conference is underway. Well, it's getting underway.
Good afternoon. My name is Jay Hayer, spelled H-A-I-R. I am president of the National Wildlife Federation, Washington, D.C. For your background information, the National Wildlife Federation is the nation's largest private conservation education organization with over 5 million members and supporters. For the last several days, my colleagues and I have been traveling in the Prince William Sound area, visiting with a number of individuals affected by this tragic oil spill. And today I would like to announce four of several major actions the National Wildlife Federation will be taking on over the next several weeks and months. To characterize perhaps what we have found, particularly in places other than Valdez, and we spent the last couple of days in Cordova, a fishing town of about 2,500 residents, almost all of whom are directly or indirectly, depending upon the fishing, commercial fishing, in the Prince William Sound area. When we arrived in Cordova on Sunday evening, we were greeted at the Reluctant Fisherman Inn with the following sign. It says, "The flags are at half-mast due to the death of our environment." Outside was a mermaid statue overlooking the harbor that had a black ribbon tied on her arm. On the wall of the local restaurant were several pieces of paper from the years that people had taken a poll on when the great herring poll for guessing the date of the opening of the herring fishing season. For that one, which was for the 1989 great herring pool, were the following words: March 24th, 1989, the fat lady sung a death song. Her name was Exxon. We met that evening with an overcapacity crowd of citizens from Cordova who expressed in a variety of ways their feelings for what had happened to their lifestyle. As you have experienced from people here or places you've been, there is an enormous amount of fear, anxiety, for what's going to happen to their lives personally and ultimately to the rehabilitation of Prince William Sound. The four things that I mentioned at the beginning of this statement are the following that we will be doing today. We are sending from Washington, D.C. letters to the appropriate congressional committees, both in the House and the Senate, to conduct field oversight hearings. There will be numerous hearings, as you could imagine, back in Washington, D.C. We want those members of Congress to come to Prince William Sound, to go to places like Cordova, to go to places like Seward, Kodiak, and Valdez, so that those individuals most directly affected, by this tragedy will be able to come and testify. And that's important both from what it cost to go to Washington, D.C., as well as the summer being the busiest period of the year, as you know, for Alaskans to earn a livelihood. The second thing that we will be calling for is for President Bush to establish a presidential commission on the Prince William Sound oil spill disaster. That commission would be, as our recommendation would go forward, comprised of distinguished Americans who could come, who could receive testimony, who would be supported with the appropriate technical and scientific expertise in order to make a recommendation back to the President and ultimately to the Congress of the United States on ways to ensure that this kind of a disaster never happens again. The third area that we will be doing, either through a series of court actions we plan to file, or hopefully through the sense of corporate responsibility of Exxon, is a request that the Exxon company establish a multi-billion-dollar Prince William Sound Trust Fund. Multi-billion-dollar Prince William Sound Trust Fund, not millions. You may be aware that Exxon is an extremely large corporation, the second largest in the world. Over the 10-year period that the Trans-Alaskan pipelines have been open, the Exxon Corporation's total corporate profits have been $49.6 billion, almost $5 billion a year. And it's our view that those who take public resources like oil and convert them into private wealth have a profound and absolute responsibility to make the investments to protect the public's interest and to protect the environment before those revenues are used to pay multi-million dollar corporate salaries by corporate jets or distributed to shareholders. The fourth action that we will be taking this week, and working with a number of individual citizens here in the Prince William Sound area and a number of organizations that are both conservation organizations and commercial and sport fishing organizations, is sending a letter to the President, which will be sent directly to Mr. Bush and printed as a full-page advertisement in the Washington Post on Thursday. And I'd like to conclude by reading you the text of that open letter. Mr. President, please come to Alaska to see personally our nation's worst environmental disaster. President Carter went to Three Mile Island. Prime Minister Gandhi went to Bhopal. General Secretary Gorbachev went to Chernobyl during those terrible tragedies. Your people are hurting. They are angry at the senseless environmental destruction which the oil industry promised would never happen. The livelihoods of thousands of Americans have been seriously threatened by the great Alaskan oil spill. Please, Mr. President, come to Cordova, Kodiak, Seward, Valdez, and other fishing towns and villages. See for yourself the economic and environmental havoc caused by an oil industry not prepared to deal with this disaster. The Prince William Sound tragedy cannot be understood from the White House horseshoe pit. You cannot delegate this responsibility. You need to walk the oil-soaked beaches, have your nostrils filled with the stench of toxic petroleum fumes, and see personally the thousands of dead and dying animals. You need to see the grief of the people, many of whom have no more tears left to cry. A president serious about environmental protection would want to see this disaster firsthand. If you did, you would understand why it is not possible to prudently develop the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Bristol Bay, and other sensitive areas at this time. Mr. President, we desperately need a national energy policy that emphasizes conservation and renewable source of energy, not continued addiction to fossil fuels. Mr. Bush, we urgently need your presence and personal leadership. During the presidential campaign, you went to Boston Harbor. As president, you went to Japan to Hirohito's funeral. Why didn't you come to this one? Please come to Alaska. See personally America's worst economic and environmental tragedy. As our president, our leader, your response is awaited. With that, I will conclude my formal remarks. And if there are time for a few questions, I've got to catch a helicopter with the Alaskan Department of Environmental Conservation in a few seconds to tour some other areas in the sound we've not yet been to. So, if there are questions, please. Yes.
Only about 100 or so questions, but just to begin with, could you give us your general impressions, having toured the affected area? Perhaps you could do it by comparing this with other ecological disasters of recent history. A brief description of what you've seen and a comparison. How bad is it, in your opinion?
Well, I would characterize this one as a classic example of the disease of corporate greed, where we have been promised, we've been hoodwinked, we were told by Exxon, Alyeska, the major producers here, and transporters here in Alaska, that this disaster could never have happened. If you read the Trans-Alaska Pipeline contingency plan, they even state in there they couldn't envision an accident in which in excess of 200,000 barrels would ever be dumped into Prince William.
We flew over it yesterday on two occasions, and there wasn't any sheen noted, but that's our best assessment as to how a sheen could occur and what we have been able to see in the past. But we're confident that there isn't any oil leaking from the vessel.
Fate said that the boom was hanging up on the bow of the Exxon Valdez due to winds or other conditions. You didn't notice that?
Yes, sometimes the wind will bring the boom up close on the bow, and there was one occasion when it did hang up, and what we end up doing is having that tended so that the boom is laying properly.
The bow of a tanker tends to go underwater and then stick out like a nose, and there's a real tendency for it to run up on there. You have to tend the booms with a boat to keep it in shape. Okay, did our bird lady arrive? All right, thank you very much.
Don Cornett, the operations manager for Alaska for Exxon, concluding this press conference. We heard from a variety of Exxon personnel, some we met for the first time. John Tompkins is with Exxon Shipping Company and is involved in the salvage efforts. And we also heard from Don Marsden, who's the Exxon claims manager on the scene here in Valdez. Monty Taylor also spoke briefly. Monty Taylor, a familiar face to Junoites over the years, worked for Exxon, was Don Cornett's predecessor. The statements we heard today, status report from Exxon, about 15 to 17,000 barrels of oil still on board the ship. Most of that oil either in the safe compartments that were not holed during the grounding. There is, however, a sheen of oil or a layer of oil on top of water in the damaged compartments. They're working on skimming that off now before the vessel is completely repaired. We heard that there was some controversy among press members, but that about 2,300 barrels, 2,300 barrels a day is the goal for the skimmers. Some 18,000 barrels of oil have been recovered. Some 39 skimmers are at work. There are 200,000 feet of boom. Communications has been raised as an ongoing problem for the workers out in the field in Prince William Sound. There's a joint communication center being established, pooling resources from the state, Coast Guard, and Exxon. That should be in place probably by early next week. Elements are being worked on now. Salvage inspection is continuing. They mentioned that an additional 500 Alaskan hires are expected in the next 7 days. There are about 1,000 contract workers now, including both worker crews and crews on board boats. One note by Don Cornett of Exxon is that all the manpower that can be used currently is mobilized and is in hand. They've received about 400 claims requests so far. We also heard from, again, Don Marsden, the claims manager, regarding some of the questions about claims, clarifying what waivers and such people have to sign, and the fact that Exxon individually works out claims with each claimant. There was some controversy by press members about conflicting figures from Coast Guard and DEC briefings. One question regarded the effect of weather on the skimmers. There are 39 skimmers out, according to Exxon operations. Weather in the Gulf of Alaska is picking up, wind blowing at about 35 knots. However, in Prince William Sound, the conditions are not that dramatic. And so far as Exxon knows or says, the skimmers are in operation. There was evidently a report at an earlier DEC meeting this morning that said some of the skimmers may be coming in. Again, about 2,300 barrels a day is the estimate for oil recovery. About 40% of the 240,000 barrels originally spilled is estimated to have evaporated or dispersed to this point. 18,000 barrels have been recovered. That's still less than 1% of the oil. And about a small amount has been burned or otherwise collected, which leaves about 60% of the original spill still at large, and that's divided equally or evenly between the shoreline, Prince William Sound, and the Gulf of Alaska, the North Gulf Coast. At this point, there are no other press conferences scheduled for today. We will be trying to get a briefing by DEC tomorrow if one is scheduled, and also any further Exxon briefings, any briefings by DEC, the Coast Guard, the NTSB, or other organizations. We will be advising stations down the line. One other note was that the Exxon Valdez is undergoing the salvage repair work. Surveys have been completed. They're in the middle of analyzing the actual effects and impacts and expect to begin the repair work and may have the vessel moving in a matter of weeks rather than months. I want to thank KCHU and Talkeetna, our community radio volunteer, Tricia King, for her assistance in this broadcast. Engineering back at the KCHU studios is James Winchester. Also, I'd like to acknowledge that continuing coverage of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and cleanup has been made possible in part by an emergency grant from the City of Valdez and listener contributions. We'll be back from the Valdez Civic Center or the Valdez City Council Chambers or wherever the next press conference is scheduled. I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom. We're standing by for the start of a National Wildlife Federation press conference. We're broadcasting this conference in Valdez and Cordova via KCHU Radio. Cameras are here, and they've been testing their white balance and getting ready to start, and now the conference is underway. It's getting underway.
Good afternoon. My name is Jay Hare, spelled H-A-I-R. I am president of the National Wildlife Federation, Washington, D.C. For your background information, the National Wildlife Federation is the nation's largest private conservation education organization with over 5 million members and supporters. For the last several days, my colleagues and I have been traveling in the Prince William Sound area, visiting with a number of individuals affected by this tragic oil spill. And today I would like to announce four of several major actions the National Wildlife Federation will be taking on over the next several weeks and months to characterize perhaps what we have found, particularly in places other than Valdez. And we spent the last couple of days in Cordova, a fishing town of about 2,500 residents, almost all of whom are directly or indirectly, depending upon the fishing, commercial fishing in the Prince William Sound area. When we arrived in Cordova on Sunday evening, we were greeted at the Reluctant Fisherman Inn with the following sign. It says, "The flags are at half mast due to the death of our environment." Outside was a mermaid statue overlooking the harbor that had a black ribbon tied on her arm. On the wall of the local restaurant were several pieces of paper from the years that people had taken a poll on when the great herring poll for guessing the date of the opening of the herring fishing season. For that one, which was for the 1989 great herring pool, were the following words: March 24th, 1989, the fat lady sung a death song. Her name was Exxon. We met that evening with an overcapacity crowd of citizens from Cordova who expressed in a variety of ways their feelings for what had happened to their lifestyle. As you have experienced from people here or places you've been, there is an enormous amount of fear, anxiety for what's going to happen to their lives personally and ultimately to the rehabilitation of Prince William Sound. The four things that I mentioned at the beginning of this statement are the following that we will be doing today. We are sending from Washington, D.C., letters to the appropriate congressional committees, both in the House and the Senate, to conduct field oversight hearings. There will be numerous hearings, as you can imagine, back in Washington, D.C. We want those members of Congress to come to Prince William Sound, to go to places like Cordova, to go to places like Seward, Kodiak, and Valdez, so that those individuals most directly affected by this tragedy will be able to come and testify. And that's important both from what it cost to go to Washington, D.C., as well as the summer being the busiest period of the year, as you know, for Alaskans to earn a livelihood. The second thing that we will be calling for is for President Bush to establish a presidential commission on the Prince William Sound oil spill disaster. That commission would be, as our recommendation would go forward, comprised of distinguished Americans who could come, who could receive testimony, who would be supported with the appropriate technical and scientific expertise in order to make a recommendation back to the President and ultimately to the Congress of the United States on ways to ensure that this kind of a disaster never happens again. The third area that we will be doing, either through a series of court actions we plan to file, or hopefully through the sense of corporate responsibility of Exxon, is a request that the Exxon company establish a multi-billion dollar Prince William Sound Trust Fund. Multi-billion dollar Prince William Sound Trust Fund, not millions. You may be aware that Exxon is an extremely large corporation, the second largest in the world. Over the 10-year period that the Trans-Alaskan pipelines have been open, the Exxon Corporation's total corporate profits have been $49.6 billion, almost $5 billion a year. It's our view that those who take public resources, like oil, and convert them into private wealth, have a profound and absolute responsibility to make the investments to protect the public's interest and to protect the interest, protect the environment, before those revenues are used to pay multi-million dollar corporate salaries by corporate jets or distributed to shareholders. The fourth action that we will be taking this week, I'm working with a number of individual citizens here in the Prince William Sound area and a number of organizations that are both conservation organizations and commercial and sport fishing organizations, sending a letter to the President, which will be sent directly to Mr. Bush and printed as a full-page advertisement in the Washington Post on Thursday. And I'd like to conclude by reading you the text of that open letter. Mr. President, please come to Alaska to see personally our nation's worst environmental disaster. President Carter went to Three Mile Island. Prime Minister Gandhi went to Bhopal. General Secretary Gorbachev went to Chernobyl during those terrible tragedies. Your people are hurting. They are angry at the senseless environmental destruction which the oil industry promised would never happen. The livelihoods of thousands of Americans have been seriously threatened by the great Alaskan oil spill. Please, Mr. President, come to Cordova, Kodiak, Seward, Valdez, and other fishing towns and villages. See for yourself the economic and environmental havoc caused by an oil industry not prepared to deal with this disaster. The Prince William Sound tragedy cannot be understood from the White House horseshoe pit. You cannot delegate this responsibility. You need to walk the oil-soaked beaches, have your nostrils filled with the stench of toxic petroleum fumes, and see personally the thousands of dead and dying animals. You need to see the grief of the people, many of whom have no more tears left to cry. A president serious about environmental protection would want to see this disaster firsthand. If you did, you would understand why it is not possible to prudently develop the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, Bristol Bay, and other sensitive areas at this time. Mr. President, we desperately need a national energy policy that emphasizes conservation and renewable source of energy, not continued addiction to fossil fuels. Mr. Bush, we urgently need your presence and personal leadership. During the presidential campaign, you went to Boston Harbor. As president, you went to Japan to Hirohito's funeral. Why didn't you come to this one? Please come to Alaska. See personally America's worst economic and environmental tragedy. As our president, our leader, your response is awaited. With that, I will conclude my formal remarks. And if there are time for a few questions, I've got to catch a helicopter with the Alaskan Department of Environmental Conservation in a few seconds to tour some other areas in the Sound we've not yet been to. So, if there are questions, please.
Yes. Only about 100 or so questions, but just to begin with, could you give us your general impressions, having toured the affected area? Perhaps you could do it by comparing this with other ecological disasters of recent history. A brief description of what you've seen and a comparison. How bad is it, in your opinion?
Well, I would characterize this one as a classic example of the disease of corporate greed, where we have been promised, we've been hoodwinked, we were told by Exxon, Alyeska, the major producers here, and transporters here in Alaska, that this disaster could never have happened. If you read the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Contingency Plan, they even state in there they couldn't envision an accident in which in excess of 200,000 barrels would ever be dumped into Prince William Sound. Why couldn't they envision that if you had tankers like the Exxon Valdez carrying 1.3 billion barrels? My specific reaction to your question is that from what we've seen, this is an example of where nobody's in charge, everybody's in charge, and the kinds of responses that needed to happen early on to contain this disaster simply were not in place. We need to have a complete revision of this kind of a contingency plan and a complete revision of how we're going to respond to it and put one person in charge. And immediately, when another tanker goes on Bligh Reef, and it will, it's just a matter of time, immediately the corporation that's responsible is moved out of the area of responsibility, and you bring in a public figure responsible for that. I think if we do that, then we'll be able to contain the spill. My recommendation would, in a case like this, would have been to immediately offload personnel on the Exxon Valdez, the local citizens affected by the fire, and to torch the Exxon Valdez in place.
How about a comparison? Could you characterize the degree of environmental harm that you feel has been done by this? Perhaps you could do it by comparing it to other ecological disasters.
Well, we were very actively involved in some of the follow-up activities and trying to establish working relationships with Soviet scientists in Chernobyl. And there's no doubt in my mind that the long-term environmental consequences of the Prince William Sound oil spill will far exceed those of Chernobyl or Bhopal. They were serious, obviously. In Bhopal, thousands of people were killed or injured permanently. But in here you really have destroyed an environmental system that probably is one of the most pristine in all of North America. I think it's probably fair to say that in our lifetimes, everyone in this room, we will never see Prince William Sound the way it was on March 23rd, 1989.
To save a few birds and a few waters, is that a valid gesture on their part?
As a scientist myself, in terms of the impact on the population of either the marine mammals affected, particularly otters, or the number of species of birds, you're not going to have any measurable effect on the long-term population viability of any of the species involved. But there's another very important side to this. People demand, people expect, they have a right to expect to try to save all those animals that have been impacted. And I think that that's going to have a continued foreseeable future. massive mortality rates, the number of otters that will be successfully rehabilitated and released will be de minimis. And there'll have to be major management efforts to reestablish populations in those areas once there is a food chain reestablished that can sustain those species in those areas. But it's the public would absolutely, and they should be, outraged by this if those kinds of actions were not taken. I could say that the same kind of futile effort is being made by Exxon going around and soaking up and polishing rocks with oil on them. In the long haul, that's not going to remove a significant amount of oil from Prince William Sound. In the long haul, the only way it's going to be removed is through that kind of action, skimming action, but ultimately nature's going to have to resolve the problem. And that's going to take years, not decades, to do. There's a question over here? Perhaps not.
With regard to the requests that you've made, your 4 points that you made in your opening statement, naturally, in any kind of negotiation, you go in demanding as much as you possibly can envision, hoping perhaps for salvaging something out of what you have asked for. I wonder, with that in mind, if you could perhaps nail down what you think is most important from a practical point of view of the things that you have requested. Is it most important to have President Bush come here? From a practical point of view, would it be most important to have congressional hearings here? What would you give most emphasis to?
Well, I would say from a very pragmatic political point of view, I think it's absolutely embarrassing that the president has not personally visited the nation's worst environmental disaster. I mean, I cannot in my wildest imagination wonder why that hasn't happened. You know, two scenarios that come to mind is Alaska, because of its few electoral votes, so unimportant that the president couldn't come? Or is it because George Bush's ties to the oil industry are so strong and so historic that he has personally been unwilling to come and confront the disaster that an industry he came out of has caused? Mr. Bush, I believe, if he came and saw, because I know George Bush, he's a very decent individual, he is committed to the environment, I believe if he saw this, he would change his mind rather rapidly about going into sensitive areas like the Arctic Refuge in the future. I think the most important thing that has to happen over the next several months is for this issue not to get lost from the view of the public. And there are several ways of doing that. The president, wherever he goes, is going to make news. That's important. Members of Congress coming here, listening to the people, are going to understand more and also make news. But as we go through the next several months of deliberations in Washington, various people trying to sort out what happens, the American people, I think, are as angry, because we get hundreds of letters and phone calls, are as angry as I've ever seen them in the last 10 years that I've been actively involved in this kind of activity of environmental protection. They're going to want to demand major changes. If there's any good that can come out of this beyond the restoration of Prince William Sound, the good is the American people will demand, as we approach the 21st century, establish a national energy policy. That's the good. I've got to go shortly, so I'm getting the high sign back there, but go ahead. Yes, back here.
What exactly did you have in mind for the multi-billion dollar fund that you suggest Exxon establish? And also, could you go a little farther on your intimation that you might have to sue Exxon to get them to establish that?
Well, I think Exxon has responsibilities to Prince William Sound for as long as it takes. I'm fearful that Exxon, once the oil sheens are off the water, once the dead otter and other species of wildlife have been picked up, and once the tankers are floating again full speed down the Valdez Strait, will say, hey, we did it, it's over with. Well, it's not over with. It's not over with until Prince William Sound is returned to its pristine condition. And I want them to, in essence, put a bond up, put a trust up, not of which they are the stewards of, but which you have trustees that are representative of people here affected by it. For example, what's going to happen to the herring fishing fleet in Cordova? Not this year. They've already lost their $1 million fishers this year. What's going to happen 5, 6, 10 years from now? One of the fears that they have with the high school age children in Cordova, the real serious fear and anguish caused by the very simple question, are we now going to be able to go to college? Are we going to be able to get an education? The answer, I think, has to be that Exxon has to guarantee them that those kinds of opportunities for education and economic development are not going to be lost simply because Exxon walks away from it. I'll be honest with you. I don't trust Exxon. This is a classic example of big oil and big lie. They told us in the middle 70s it couldn't happen at Valdez. It did. They're telling us now with a multi-million dollar media campaign they've done a great job at Poudreau Bay, and they're absolutely lying. We have released a report to Congress called Oil in the Arctic that has shown that there are numerous violations to the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act in Poudreau Bay, the North Slope of Alaska. The EPA has done the very same kind of analysis. And why would you ever trust them again after those two big lies? Either to comply with safe transport of oil down Valdez Strait or ever to go into the coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge, Bristol Bay, and other sensitive areas in this state. You simply don't. Yes, sir.
Can you make a comparison between the oil spill in Bhopal and Chernobyl? Could you repeat that statement again?
I don't know what I said. I'll repeat a statement. I hope it'll be consistent with that. The Prince William Sound oil spill, in my view, from an environmental point of view, is every bit as serious as were the Union Carbide disaster in Bhopal, where thousands of Indians were either killed or permanently maimed, or the nuclear disaster in Chernobyl. Those issues that I just mentioned, Bhopal and Chernobyl, were much easier contained. In terms of the long-term environmental ramifications, the Prince William Sound disaster has to rank as not only this country's, but probably one of the world's greatest environmental disasters ever. We'll have this problem to deal with for the rest of our lives. Okay. Anything else? Gotta go. Thank you very much.
And those are the concluding remarks by Jay Hare, who is the president of the National Wildlife Federation of Washington, D.C. That organization described by Mr. Hare as the largest private conservation education organization in the country. Briefly, he described the efforts of he and his people in spending several days in investigating the Prince William Sound area and meetings in Cordova. He mentioned four action items that the National Wildlife Federation is considering. One, that they'll be sending letters from their D.C. office to appropriate congressional offices requesting that the appropriate congressional committees hold field oversight hearings. Mr. Hare stressing his feeling that the Congress needs to come to places like Valdez, Cordova, Kodiak, Seward, and hold hearings here to really assess the impact on the communities and people in those communities. Also, a second action item on the National Wildlife Federation agenda is to encourage President Bush to establish a presidential commission on the Prince William Sound oil spill disaster to meet, hold hearings, to make recommendations to both the President and eventually to Congress on what needs to be done to prevent any further such oil spills or disasters in the Sound. Mr. Hare also promised court action, or at least heavy political pressure, court action if needed, to force Exxon to establish a multi-billion dollar trust fund for Prince William Sound rehabilitation. Again, multi-billion dollar. This item being justified because of the need for the long approach and for the long commitment to organize the rehabilitation. And finally, a coalition of groups is sending an open letter to President Bush that will be published, really next week in the Washington Post. An open letter encouraging, it's a plea to President Bush to come to the site of the disaster, citing that you cannot delegate this responsibility, and saying that a president serious about environmental conservation and preservation should be here to see the effects of the oil spill firsthand. In response to questions by some of the press members present, some very strong statements on the part of Jay Hare, president of the National Wildlife Federation, about his not trusting the oil industry, Exxon in particular, and the need for legislation to be put in place to take control of any future oil spills immediately away from the owner company and place it under the control of a public official responsive to the local needs. Again, strong language from the National Wildlife Federation, not unanticipated, regarding the efforts by Exxon to clean up and the efforts by the industry to put the best face on the issue. That about wraps up this press conference. We'll be, we do have a notice that tomorrow, Holland America West Tours is holding a news conference. Holland America evidently working with the Prince William Sound Tourism Coalition to develop their own fund to work in the cleanup of the sound. There's a press conference tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. We'll try to broadcast that for you. And any other press briefings or meetings that we're informed of, we'll try to get on the air, at least get reports of them to you. I want to thank KCHU and Talkeetna Radio, our community radio volunteer, Tricia King, for her assistance in this broadcast. James Winchester and or Mary Beth Lomax are back at KCHU. I'm Dave Hammack. Continuing coverage of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and cleanup has been made possible in part by an emergency grant from the City of Valdez and listener contributions. From the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom, I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.